Morning, everyone. The Early Learning and Elementary Education Subcommittee will now come to order. For the record, please remember to turn on your microphone for the roll call. Kirsten, call the roll.
Chair Lupus. Vice Chair Coster.
Here.
Ranking Member Davis.
Here.
Representative Caruso.
Good morning.
Representative DeSegli.
Here.
Representative Duggan.
Here.
Representative Hawkins.
Here.
Representative Hunchowski.
Here.
Representative Lamarca. Representative Learned.
Here.
Representative McCurdy.
Here.
Representative Mooney.
Here.
Representative Nixon.
Here.
Representative Roach. Representative Rodriguez.
Present.
Representative Tribolsi. Representative Trunow. Representative Williams.
Here.
Mr. Chair, we have a quorum.
Thank you, Kirsten. We are going to have three bills on our agenda today, team. So we're going to begin with PCS for HB 1203, K-12 Personal Evaluation Procedures and Criteria by Representative Federhoff.
Good morning, Chair, and thank you so much for hearing this bill. So do you want me to go ahead and explain the PCS?
So members, there's a strike all to this bill, so if it's okay with the committee, we can have her present the strike all and then have questions on the strike all. Is that all right? Okay. You're recognized to present the strike all.
Thank you. So the strike all removes the provisions relating to reporting sexual misconduct and background screening added by the PCS and provides that the bill takes effect upon becoming law. Basically, the strike all amendment maintains the current relating to clause so that the bill will not have to be temporarily postponed.
Members, are there questions on the strike all amendment? Seeing none, is there any objection to the amendment? We have one person who is wishing to testify, Shan Goff from the Foundation for Florida's Future. Waiving support. Thank you, Ms. Goff.
Nice to see you.
Members, any objection to the amendment? I show the amendment adopted without objection. Members, since the strike all amendment was adopted, all the other amendments are not going to be considered, so we're back on the bill as amended. Are there questions on the bill as amended? So, Representative, if you'd like to explain the bill as amended.
Definitely. So, the strike all basically is just going back to the original bill. The PCS was adding language, and we're just going back to the original bill of 1203, which is dealing with the collective bargaining issue and the superintendents. Yep.
Ranking Member Davis, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Just for clarity, Representative, could you talk to us about the 1203 as it is now?
Definitely.
With the collective bargaining piece.
Okay. So basically, in 2011, the Florida legislature modernized the state's teacher evaluation systems to emphasize the importance of student achievement as a primary factor in the evaluation of teachers. The quality of our state's education system has been on the rise ever since. And so basically, what's happening is the unions are basically trying to say that teacher evaluations need to be part of the collective bargaining process. And collective bargaining has always applied to wages, benefits, and working conditions, not how an employer evaluates their employees. There is no other business or industry that allows an employee to say, this is how I want to be evaluated. And so basically what we're saying is the district superintendents and basically the school districts have the ability to craft the teacher evaluation so that they have the best teachers in the positions that are there so that they can continue to have effective teachers on staff. Basically what we're saying is they should be able to evaluate their teachers as they see fit, and it shouldn't be part of the collective bargaining process.
Follow up?
Yes.
You recognize ranking member.
So did you talk, so you're saying you, for a teacher, and help me understand, mm-hmm. a teacher should not be a part of the teacher evaluation, that this should, kind of explain that to me. I guess it's cloudy.
Sure.
You recognize.
So I'm not saying that the teacher shouldn't be a part of the evaluation. There's certainly opportunities to self-evaluate and to learn more about how they're being evaluated so that they can improve their teaching. But I don't think that they should be necessarily involved in the process where they're crafting how they're evaluated. That makes sense?
You recognize.
It does. And coming out of the classroom, I guess it's not clear because I'm trying to, excuse me, understand the crafting of their evaluation. Because the process that I understand is not with the teacher. It's a part of the negotiation between the unions and the school districts. Mm-hmm. The teacher's involved, but also student performance is involved. And this is also tied into the wages and employment. So the language that you're saying, mm-hmm. the crafting of their evaluation, I'm having a hard time with.
Right. So, excuse me, Chair. So basically what it comes down to is that the unions are using the crafting of evaluations or their input on evaluations as an impasse. I think, you know, basically collective bargaining is going to an impasse because they're using that as a tool to basically gum up the works. What we're saying is, and this is, there's been actual evidence of this, there's a school district in Central Florida where their evaluation process has been frozen since 2018 due to ongoing litigation. So they haven't been able to make, the district itself has not been able to make improvements to their evaluation system since 2018 because it's been in litigation for the last 3 years. And essentially what they're doing is using this as part of the collective bargaining tool to gum up the situation. And so what we're saying is this should not be a part of what they're doing when they're doing collective bargaining. It shouldn't be part of the wages, it shouldn't be part of the working conditions, and it shouldn't be part of the benefits. It should be its separate entity, and the district should be able to control their evaluation system.
One last.
You recognize, ranking member.
I know your bill doesn't have probably anything to do with this. If that's the case, do you have a solution, or do you have a framework for what happens after that? Or collective bargaining is just taken out of the picture altogether?
No. So what we're saying is that evaluations are not going to be part of the collective. We're not saying collective bargaining is being removed. We're saying that evaluations shall not be part of the collective bargaining compromises.
Representative Learning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative. I want to just make sure I understood where you're saying as far as, you know, the evaluation shouldn't be part of collective bargaining, but pay should. Mm-hmm. But it's my understanding that the evaluation is tied to pay. So how do you reconcile the fact that part of the equation is going to be subject to the collective bargain if it is directly tied to the other part?
You recognize.
I understand what you're saying, but the fact is that there's no other business or entity out there where a teacher or a employee has the ability to go in there and say, this is how I want to be evaluated. And if I don't like the way I'm being evaluated, I can go to the unions and basically say, I don't like how they're evaluating me because it makes me look bad. And so therefore, you should go into bargaining and say, this is not how I should be evaluated. You see what I'm saying?
You recognize.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do. I think, you know, I think that we're talking about a unique industry because there are so many teachers across the state, right? Like, I'm a small business owner, right? So my evaluation of an employee, I own a tutoring center, if anybody knows. And my evaluation of an employee might be as simple as sitting down with them and, you know, supervising and, you know, listening in on one of their sessions. And then afterwards, hey, that kid had a bad day, you know, and I'll take that context in when I'm doing my evaluation. So I guess I just don't understand, like, an employer would do that intrinsically. Mm-hmm. And I'm making this a question, Mr. Chair.
We're waiting.
Thank you. The employer would do that intrinsically, but in a collective bargaining situation where we're talking about, you know, 200,000 kids and 30,000 teachers in Hillsborough County, at least. Like, I guess, can you comment on how, why a collectively bargained situation would be different than somebody in, like, a private practice?
Sure. You recognize.
So first of all, I'd like to say that there's no point in this bill where we're saying that a district superintendent can't go to the unions and negotiate evaluations. We're not saying they can't. We're saying that mandatorily we're not making the district secretary or district superintendents have to use that, be a part of a collective bargaining portion of that. So we're not saying that. Basically, what we're saying is that you can, it can be part of the bargaining part of it, but it's not mandatory. Does that make sense?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there any other parts of like a teacher's performance or their job or whatever that is not subject to collective bargaining? Like, we're obviously creating a separate category here of like, hey, we can't involve this in the collective bargain. Is there anything else that's already in that category?
I'm not sure. I'd have to find an answer.
Representative Nixon, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Rep. Learned took one of my questions in regards to the evaluations being tied to benefits. But I had another question because I have a lot of teachers that are calling my offices and things like that, just in regards to a lot of issues, but I know that they're getting frustrated. And so my question to you is in regards to the evaluation process, because who exactly is coming up with the process? Because I fear that they are oftentimes too far removed from what's going on in the classroom, what's actually going on in a classroom, which it seems to be why the collective bargaining of that evaluation stands in the first place. So who's actually coming up with it, you're saying?
You recognize.
Thank you, Chair. So that goes back to my previous statement where the districts are trying to fine-tune their evaluation system. They're the ones that come up with the evaluation mm-hmm. system. They're trying to fine-tune it, but when it gets tied to this collective bargaining system, basically what happens is, you know, if the union doesn't agree with the changes that they're trying to make at the district level, then basically they can't make those changes. They can't fine-tune that and make their teachers more effective and help their students learn better. And so there have been multiple examples of where they try to make changes, the unions don't necessarily agree with the changes, and so therefore, it like I said before, it gums up the collective bargaining process because it's been tied into that. So the schools are trying to modernize the way that they do their evaluations or fine-tune it according to what their students need, and they're not able to because basically it comes to a standstill. It's got to go through mediation and all this and gets caught up in litigation, and they can't do that. And so what we're trying to do is prevent that from happening. There can be conversations between the unions and the superintendents about evaluations, but it shouldn't be part of the collective bargaining process.
Follow up.
You're recognized.
So aren't these unions, don't they have teachers as members that are sitting at the collective bargaining table? So wouldn't they have a vested interest in ensuring that the evaluation is supportive of quality work?
You're recognized.
Absolutely. And in most cases, that is the case. But there are times and there are examples of when that doesn't work out. And what we're trying to do is prevent those times from it not working out.
Members, any additional questions? Ranking Member Davis, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Vetterhoff, isn't the teacher evaluation process already outlined in law as far as the process and the parameters of it now?
You recognize?
Yes, it is. As of 2011, we as a state legislature actually fine-tuned that process, but then the superintendents can actually say that there's a change that needs to be made locally. They can fine-tune that.
Just one question. You recognize?
So with it already being outlined in law, just explain to me at this point, what would be the impact of your bill?
You recognize?
So basically the impact of my bill would be that we cannot tie teacher evaluations to the collective bargaining process. Yes, teacher evaluations, the standards are in law currently, but we do not want to tie teacher evaluations to collective bargaining and have a situation where literally a school district has had their hands tied for over 3 years in being able to move forward with changes to fine-tune their teacher evaluations. Yes, their standards, but then you can fine-tune that from there. You don't want the local superintendents to not be able to make sure that their students are getting the best education possible. And by having this tied to collective bargaining, that's what's happening.
Members, any additional questions? Representative Williams, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You spoke about after the evaluation is done, the superintendent may have the option to fine-tune the findings. What does that mean?
You're recognized.
I'm sorry, I think you misunderstood me. Not the findings. Basically, what they can do is they can look at what the evaluations are, and then they can work with the teachers to obviously, you know, see where there needs to be improvement, but they're not going to change the findings or anything like that.
You recognize.
Okay, they can work with the teachers, and they can do what after working with the teachers? They can't change what's the outcome of the evaluation.
No, but they can, excuse me, Chair.
You recognize.
They can certainly work with the teachers and create a development plan that they can work with the teachers and figure out, you know, okay, maybe you're a little weak in this part of your teaching, and here's, you know, maybe you can work with a peer or you can work with somebody else to figure out how you can improve that. So that's how they would work with them.
Thank you.
Members, any additional questions? Okay, we're going to move into public testimony. First up, we have Brita Lincoln, Florida PTA. Would like to speak?
Thank you. Good morning. I just wanted to let you know that Florida PTA appreciates the committee's bill and is particularly supportive of the provisions that shield students from sexual abusers, especially those requiring fingerprints that expand the protections to children attending charter schools.
Thank you, Ms. Lincoln. Kevin Daly, representing himself. Waiving opposition. Thank you, sir. Sharla Fox, representing self. Waiving in opposition. Thank you. Mary Rivera. Thank you. Kim Skelton. Thank you, Ms. Skelton. Patricia Farley. Thank you, Ms. Farley. I'm trying to read this. Niona McGill. Thank you, Ms. McGill. Jacqueline Stevens. Kathy Bame, Florida Education Association.
Thank you, Chair.
In
conversations yesterday, I want to just kind of jump into this. We heard in multiple offices, teachers should not dictate their evaluation. So I want to kind of clear up a misconception. They don't. Individual teachers don't dictate their evaluation. Instead, in negotiating a process to be used throughout the district is simply a best practice for professional assessments. What's important is that the process be fair and evenly applied to all teachers in a way that's not so time-consuming that it takes away from student instruction and does guide and identify early on the teachers that need assistance. And it also identifies teachers that are doing great work so that they can share it. So part of the conversation, and I spent a lot of time negotiating this evaluation system in Escambia County, And our goal was to get in the classrooms early, to identify good practice, identify struggling teachers, and make sure they had assistance. We don't want to wait until the end of the year, because then it's too late and the kids have had a full year with a teacher who may be struggling, or we haven't used to our best advantage a teacher who's really good. It's complicated and especially difficult to evaluate since student learning is a process. The system must be able to monitor and advise improvement. The advanced design work that we do in bargaining and negotiations on the evaluation is tremendously important to ensure that the evidence, which is the documentation of the evidence of teaching, does not overshadow strong student learning. We don't want to spend so much time establishing that we're doing well that we don't actually plan for instruction and deliver good instruction. And a lot of times that's the crux of the tension with the district and our unions as we talk. is how much documentation is required to establish good practice, and should we spend that much time collecting and preparing artifacts? And nowadays it's uploading, but for me it was a 3-inch binder every single year as I went to my evaluation. So the reality check comes from discussing the implementation of evaluation system, and that's the critical part to developing a good process. It's the balance that comes from collaboration and negotiations. I will say I am only aware of one situation of impasse in 10 years in 67 counties, and I don't think that that is the warrant for this legislation. And I will also say that the final ending to an impasse, which can move very quickly, is that the school board sits as a legislative body and decides. It's not a lengthy process when it doesn't have to be. So thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Ms. Bain. Jason LaGauche from Orange County Public Schools. Waves in support. Thank you, Mr. LaGauche. And Jerry Bursch from Pasco County Schools. Waving support. All right, members, that concludes public testimony. Is there debate on the bill? Representative Nixon, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Woo! That's all I can say right now. You know, I come from a union family. I've been a member of a union, and it's just frustrating being in this body, seeing that there's an attack on unions. But, you know, unions are members. They're workers. They're people who deserve to be heard, to ensure that they have a good working environment, right? And so my fear, having 5 kids now, I'm gonna keep bringing it up, it seems like a lot of times in this committee, who are, 3 of which who are in public school, is the fact that there is a mass exodus of teachers in our state of Florida. We also have over a 5,000 teacher shortage, and that's simply because we have not trusted our teachers. I feel that we need to trust our teachers when they say that sometimes some evaluations can be disruptive to the student learning environment, which is why they want to collaborate on the evaluation process itself. I think we need to trust our teachers when they say that they don't want to do more documenting as opposed to teaching, right? I think we need to trust our teachers when they're telling us that they're burnt out, right? That they don't get the proper resources and tools that they need to ensure that our children are successful and becoming productive citizens, because we keep putting more processes and procedures in place as opposed to allowing them to teach. I am getting countless calls. I see it every day. My daughter's in 9th grade now. Every year since middle school, in one of her core classes, she has had a substitute teacher. What is that doing? What type of product are we putting out when that is what is happening right now? And so I feel personally that in order to increase good morale amongst the teachers and to ensure that we're making a great working environment for them, because we want them to come back, right? Like my teachers, when I was, you know, in school, they were there 15, 20, 30 years. We can barely keep 5-year teachers in place. Like, they're leaving because of things like this. And so for that reason, members on this committee, I ask you to please vote no on this bill, because we need to start trusting our teachers.
Representative Caruso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, thanks for bringing this bill forward. I'm in favor of it, and I wanted to wish the great chair a happy new year.
Well played. Members, any additional debate? Ranking Member Davis.
Thank you, Chair. I don't think it's much more needed after my colleague, Rep. Nixon, laid it out. But I just feel like coming out of the classroom, I hear a lot of her sentiments. And I'm just not convinced that removing the evaluation from the collective bargaining is the right thing to do. She mentioned teacher shortage, which is ultimately at its highest point now, coming out of COVID, and we're still living through that. But you've heard many people sitting in the audience in opposition of this, and I would suspect that a number of those people are teachers, are in the education realm themselves. So there is a negotiation that's going on. There is a collaborative process that's going on right now. The process that's being described here today is not necessarily what's happening. There is negotiation between the school districts and the superintendents to get the best teachers we can, make sure the teachers have the resources they need to be quality teachers and produce quality teaching in our classrooms. So I just don't feel like we're portraying what is exactly and truly happening in our school districts with this particular legislation. And so for that, I will be down on this bill.
Representative Learned in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you, Ranking Member and Rep. Nixon, for your comments. I'm also against the bill, but I think for a slightly different reason. To me, it's not about necessarily the union. I think the point is we're here for the kids. We're trying to make sure they get the best education possible when they're in our public schools, right? And wouldn't we want teachers at the table when we come to an agreement on how we should evaluate and make better teachers? Like they're invested stakeholders in the process. And I think their opinion in the evaluation process should be heard in the evaluation process so that they can continue to make their profession as good as it can be for the people that we care about in this process, which is the kids.
There is any additional debate? All right, seeing none, Representative Federhoff, you are recognized to close on your piece on the PCS.
Thank you, Chair. So first of all, I'd like to say we're not attacking the unions. We're not saying the unions can't have conversations regarding evaluations with the superintendents, with the school districts. What we're saying is we do not want this to be part of, and nor has it been previously, part of the collective bargaining process. What we're saying is in order for our students, who we're very concerned about, having the best experience, having the best teachers, it needs to be kept at a local level. And I think that the superintendents and the district and the teachers are all involved in this evaluation process. And that's the way it should be. It should not be tied to collective bargaining. And that's what we're trying to ensure, is that the districts can go in there and make changes to their evaluation and not have it become a part of this collective bargaining process, and therefore keep them from actually being able to make these changes because the unions decide that they don't like the way that the teachers are being evaluated on something. And so what we're trying to do is prevent these impasses and prevent future changes to the evaluations that will help our students and help our teachers be better at their jobs. That's what we're trying to do here. We're not trying to tell the unions that you can't be involved in the process. They can work with the districts. They can do what they need to do to have their voice heard. But what we're saying is stay out of the collective bargaining process. You weren't there before. You don't need to be there now. And you don't need to gum up the works on this. So that is the bill, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Representative Federoff, having closed on our bill, Kirsten, please call the roll.
Representatives Caruso.
Yes.
Davis.
No.
DeSegley.
Yes.
Duggan.
Yes.
Hawkins.
Yes.
Hanshofsky. Koster.
Yes.
LaMarca.
Yes.
Learned.
No.
McCurdy.
No.
Mooney.
Yes.
Nixon.
No.
Roach.
Yes.
Rodriguez.
Yes.
Trabulsi.
Yes.
Trunow.
Yes.
Williams.
No.
Chair Lupus.
Yes.
12 yeas, 5 nays.
Members, by your vote, PCS for HB 1203 will be reported favorably. Congratulations, Representative Federhoff. All right, members, keeping with the theme of PCSs, we're now going to move on to PCS for HB 173, Care of Students with Epilepsy or Seizure Disorders, sponsored by Representatives Duran and Gottlieb. Representative Duran, you are recognized to explain the PCS. I think the mic's off, Representative.
It is. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And good morning, members. Appreciate you allowing me to present this PCS. I want to thank the chair, staff, Adam Brink, for his assistance in getting it into a position where we are today to be in front of you. So let me start by talking a little bit about epilepsy. It is a neurological disorder. 1 in 26 people suffer from it. There is no cure. And it is about having unprovoked seizures. I think the in order to be diagnosed with epilepsy, it's about 2 seizures within a 24-hour period. And these seizures could last anywhere from a couple of seconds to several minutes, and it could be almost unnoticed. It can be just a few seconds of ticking, or it can be completely debilitating on the floor, everyone around you knowing that you're having something's going on. This bill speaks to how do we provide a program and an assistance for those students in our education system. The bill provides for an individualized seizure action plan. That plan entails having some information related to that student's condition. That parent is working with the doctor to provide some of this crucial information. It shows the ability of that student to understand their own conditions and has a little bit of recommendations as to the action plan for that student. This plan can be revised over the course of this. If the parent would like to update the plan, they can do that, but the plan stays in place until it's updated. But this plan will be put in place with the students. It's required for any of those employees who are regularly seeing that student to see and understand what that plan is. It allows them to be empowered to understand what that student might be going through when they're doing so. And then finally, the second component to what this bill does is it provides for a education program that the Department of Education will provide this kind of training that's free that will be developed and prepared by some of the nonprofit foundations and organizations who are specialized in epilepsy. That's the bill. One other piece to it, because it's a PCS, and I think it's important to kind of differentiate one of the issues in this bill that we had removed from the original bill language was the liability issues. We already have sovereign immunity in place, so we're just keeping that and keeping this nice and cleaning that in. That's the bill.
Thank you, Representative. Members, are there questions on the PCS? Representative Roach, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, Representative, for bringing this good bill. Just one quick question. Does anything in the bill require a parent to share a child's medical information with school officials if they choose not to do so?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that question. No.
Thank you.
Members, any additional questions? All right. Seeing none, we are going to go to public testimony. First up, Stephen Wynn, the Florida Osteopathic Medical Association. Waiving in support. Breida Lincoln, Florida PTA. Waiving in support. Thank you, Ms. Lincoln. Steve Shale, Epilepsy Florida. You turned it off.
Sorry. It's been 23 years since I presented a local bill as an aide, so forgive me. I'm here today in two capacities. One, as a 10-year member of the Board of Epilepsy Florida, and secondly, as an epileptic myself. And when I was a kid, 8 years old, having my first seizure, and on the scale of things that Representative Grant talked about, I was the kid who had the full-fledged seizure on the ground, et cetera. As you can imagine, there was a lot of confusion in schools about what to do if something like that happened. And frankly, as an 8-year-old, 9-year-old, 10-year-old in school, it was really hard to communicate what that experience was like, both from the standpoint of what would happen if I had a seizure, and also just the anxiety of talking about these things. And so a lot of the work that we do at Epilepsy Florida is frankly helping parents navigate these types of issues. This bill is really important, Representative Roach, to your point, as a voluntary mechanism to give parents the ability to explain in real clear language with the help of a doctor of what happens at that moment when a kid has a seizure. There's a lot of wise tales on what to do when somebody has a seizure. People talk about pulling a tongue out, et cetera. It really is just a function of making sure that the kids are in a safe place where they can't get hurt and that they're kind of given the space to just kind of go through the event by themselves. Chair Lupus, really, we could not be here today without your work. Mr. Brink, really appreciate all the work you helped to get us here. This is a really important bill, and again, it empowers parents to be in a place to help educators know what to do in these moments. It gives kids the peace of comfort of knowing that they have a seizure, that there's a plan in place. And again, just truly appreciate everybody who worked to get us here today. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schill. Olivia Paolio, Epilepsy Foundation of FSU. Waving support. Thank you so much. My 3-year-old daughter's name is Olivia. Great name. Karen Collison. Thank you for joining us.
Okay. Good morning, Chair. Thank you to you and members of the Early Learning and Elementary Education Subcommittee for allowing me to speak today. My name is Karen Colson, and I'm here as a grandmother of a loved one with epilepsy. My grandson would be turning 10 in 2 weeks, but unfortunately, we lost him to a seizure in 2020 when he was only 8. Prior to his passing, I didn't know that a seizure alone could take his life, and I'm still trying to come to terms with that, but I know I'll see him again one day. Jax is why I'm here. I don't want others to have to go through the kind of pain and experience that our family is going through. And the Seizure Safe Schools Act was first passed in Kentucky in 2018 and has since passed in 11 more states, totaling 12 states in a matter of 2 to 3 years. And I'm hoping that Florida will be next. Seizures are far more common than most people realize. 1 in 10 people will have a seizure at some point in their life, and 1 in 26 will develop epilepsy. And when you think about that number, an average class size is about 26 people. So this truly is very common. And you don't know that you may have epilepsy or a seizure disorder until you have that first seizure. And a seizure can happen to any person in any place at any time. And it's vital that school personnel are prepared to respond in this event appropriately and effectively. Seizures are also associated with other medical conditions and are among one of the top medical emergencies at school. Jax, my grandson, was prescribed seizure rescue medicine and didn't always have a nurse on campus at his elementary school. And now that new rescue medicines have been approved by the FDA, I'm certain that passing this bill will ensure children are safer on their school campuses, because they will know appropriate seizure first aid and know more about how to respond if someone experiences a first-time seizure or if they already have epilepsy and have experienced a seizure at school. I speak about my family's experience not to scare anyone, but to help you understand how this silent killer can strike anyone with epilepsy at any time. On behalf of neurologists in the Southeast, who hear from parents of children from all walks of life, we must do something to address seizure education in the very place where children spend nearly one-third of their lives. Awareness is key, and knowledge is power. The Seizure Safe Schools Act can save children's lives in Florida, and I encourage you to move this bill forward. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, Ms. Colson. On behalf of our committee, thank you for being with us this morning. All right, members, that concludes public testimony. We are in debate on the bill. Is there debate on the bill? Yeah. Ranking Member Davis, you recognize.
Wow. Thank you for this. As a young teacher coming out of the classroom, I was listening. I had to get up and walk out because as I was listening to the grandmother, it took me back to my classroom days. Because I did have a student that had epileptic seizures. And at 8 years old, he passed. He had seizures in the classroom all the time, but to the point that the students had begun to recognize the signs when he would begin to have an event. And so sometimes you just don't know things like this are needed in schools and we don't have them. So as I was listening to, again, the grandmother, it took me back to that time. And as you can see, I get emotional because that was the probably second time that I had been in a situation where I remembered that as a young teacher. And so he did not, Dominique, did not pass with us in the school. He passed on a trip with his family in the midst of having a seizure, and they gave him time to rest, and he never woke up. But when I heard that news, the only thing I could do is flash back and think, what if that would have happened while he was here with us at school? And so I just wanted to share that to say it happens. And it's very hard to get over something like that once you've experienced it. And I was just his teacher during the day, so I can only imagine the pain that his family is going through. But to have something like this, a plan, procedures, guidance for faculty and staff in schools is amazing. And so I thank you for this. I thank you for Mrs. Shelf, who came and spoke, as well as the grandmother, for sharing her story about her grandson. So thank you for this great piece of legislation.
Representative McCurdy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Rand, thank you for bringing forth this good bill. And oftentimes we come to the Capitol, we come to our committees, and we have conversations about things that we necessarily don't see eye to eye, or things that maybe don't make sense to some of us. But I'm happy to come here today and vote up on this bill, because we're doing something to help children, to help families, and to allow parents to have that, you know, that interaction. To be a part of the planning for their children who suffer from epilepsy, right? Also wanted to mention that it extends beyond school personnel, and in this bill we address school bus drivers. Transporting kids to and from school is also important. Like it's been mentioned today, these episodes can happen at any time in any place. So just wanted to say thank you and be on record to let you know I'm excited to vote up, and I encourage all committee members to vote up on your bill today.
Representative Nixon.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks, Rep. Duran, for bringing this bill. But I just really wanted to acknowledge the grandmother for coming here and sharing your story. I know it was hard. But I think you said your son's name is Jax. But I am honored to vote up on this bill in his memory. So again, thank you for sharing your story.
Representative LaMarca, in debate.
Thank you, Chair. And Representative Duran, thanks for bringing this bill. It's nice to have a conversation when we're not going back and forth on issues, and we kind of see what the reason to bring this forward is. And let me say this from the start, I'm in no way comparing my story to the grandson or Rep. Davis's teacher, but I had a dog who suffered from epileptic fits, and we had him on phenobarbital and all kinds of things. And if you could see, and I understand it's different with a child than a pet or family member, like a dog, but if you could see the pain and just what happens when one of these, an animal or a child goes through a grand mal seizure or something like this, and pretty much blacks out, doesn't know where they are, loses control of everything, and any way to help kids in the classroom or on the bus or anywhere else in school is a good bill, and I'm glad we're not that this is a nonpartisan bill, and I'm very happy to support it. Thank you,
members. Any additional debate? All right, seeing none, Representative Mann, what I will say is I'll start by saying, and you know this, I just want to thank the ELE staff, Adam Brink, for all of his help in getting this bill here. Spent a lot of time on this issue. Most of you don't know this, but Representative Duran and I have known each other long before we got to this building, and I've had the privilege of working alongside him on behalf of children for more than a decade. And brother, I'm just proud of you, man. Great bill. So with that, you are recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate your friendship and your willingness to work with me on this, and Mr. Brink as well. And thank you for your willingness to share your stories.
For your story as well.
I think these things don't get created in a vacuum. We engage with members of the community. I thank Epilepsy Florida for their willingness to work with me and anoint me to kind of help with this bill. But again, this is a committee about ensuring students have an excellent platform to succeed, that they're safe, and that they're healthy. And that's the point of this bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Durant, having closed in his bill, Kirsten, please call the roll.
Representatives Caruso. Davis.
Yes.
DeSegley.
Yes.
Duggan. Hawkins.
Yes.
Hanshofsky.
Yes.
Koster.
Yes.
LaMarca.
Yes.
Learned.
Yes.
McCurdy.
Yes.
Mooney.
Yes.
Nixon.
Yes.
Roach.
Yes.
Rodriguez.
Yes.
Trabulsi.
Yes.
Trunow.
Yes.
Williams.
Yes.
Chiralupis.
Yes.
16 yeas, 0 nays.
Members, by your vote, PCS for HB 173 will be reported favorably. Congratulations, Robert.
Thank you.
All right, members, moving on to the last bill of the agenda from our own Representative Hawkins, HB 1421, school safety. Representative Hawkins, if you'd like to present from your desk, you can. I'm kidding. you're recognized to explain the bill. It's not on, Representative. This is your second year.
Let me start again. Chair Lupus, Vice Chair Koster, Ranking Member Davis, members and staff, thank you for the opportunity to present HB 1421 dealing with school safety. This bill is very complex, but I'd like to start with a little bit of history that in 2018, the legislature enacted the Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School Public Safety Act to address school safety and security and establish the Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School Public Safety Commission. This bill improves transparency around school safety and security as well as addresses student mental health by, one, requiring district school boards and charter school governing boards to adopt a plan that guides family reunification when K through 12 public schools are closed or unexpectedly evacuated due to natural or man-made disasters. Requiring that the State Board of Education adopt rules setting requirements for emergency drills, including timing, frequency, participation, training, notification, and accommodations. Requiring that law enforcement responsible for responding to schools in an event of an assailant emergency be physically present and participate in active assailant drills. Requiring that school safety and environmental incidents reporting data be published annually in a uniform statewide format that is easy to read and understand. Requiring all safe school officers, not just school resource officers, to complete mental health crisis and intervention training. And requiring the school district and local mobile response teams use the same suicide screening tool approved by the Department of Education. The bill also reinforces the oversight and sanctioning authority of the Commissioner of Education to oversee school safety and security compliance in the state. Mr. Chairman, that is the bill.
Thank you, Representative. Members, are there questions on the bill? Questions on the bill? Representative Williams, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hawkins and myself have had several conversations about the bill. On line 67 through 70, it mentioned non-compliance with school safety and security requires the commissioner must require the district of the school board to withhold further payment of a salary of the superintendent. How many schools or how many districts do we have that has not complied?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Representative, and thank you for the conversations we had. I thought they were very productive. And to answer your question, I would tell you that it's not that there's one district that has not complied. It's just they haven't complied fully. We can't find full compliance statewide where everybody is uniformed, and the recommendations have been made so far. So this bill tries to bring that forth to set standards and rules in place that all school districts will apply.
Follow up.
You recognize.
So if they have not complied fully, so they're 50%, are we going to take 50% of the salaries?
You recognize.
That would not be determined by this legislation, but more at the level of the oversight. But I would tell you that we're looking for full compliance for all the recommendations that are being made in this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members, any additional questions? Representative Hunchowski for a question.
Thank you, Chair Lupus. Representative Hawkins, I want to thank you for the discussions on this. As you know, I was mayor of Parkland at the time when the shooting happened, and I actually was up here advocating for the passage of the initial bill. One section I had a question on is also on the superintendent's salary. We're very specific in the bill about what the repercussions are for the superintendent's salary, which is, by the way, already in statute. They already have that power, the Office of Safe Schools. But we're not as clear what happens with the charter schools. Is that something that we could make clearer in this bill?
You're
so that there's parity? Sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Rep. Hunchowski, first of all, thank you for your leadership throughout this whole tragic ordeal. You've definitely shown you deserve to be here to keep advocating for those families and students in your community. What I would say is we know that the superintendent and the school districts approve charters, so they have a responsibility to oversee those charters. I'm willing to listen to you if we can come up with a different set of language that could apply. I understand you're troubled by having a superintendent held responsible for a charter school, but in the end, the oversight for that charter does come from the school district. A superintendent, if a charter school is found in non-compliance, could always bring up that charter at their school board meeting, asking for it to be revoked or addressed, or putting a time frame in. I'd hope that would be the procedures. But if we need to put language in like that, I'd be willing to listen to what you have to offer.
One follow-up.
You recognize.
And thank you, Representative Hawkins. You and I have spent a lot of time talking about this, and I appreciate how much this means to you, this bill. And I would love to talk to you about the language. My question is, since we've had it so specific, do you believe that we can put additional specificity regarding the separate to make sure that the charter schools are held to the same standard as the traditional public schools in this legislation?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Representative, I would tell you that this language does hold them accountable currently. It's just who is responsible for overseeing that the charters are being held or for the recommendation when it's not being that the superintendent's held accountable. So I'd be willing to listen to anything that you want to specify or clarify and see what it looks like once it's in language.
Thank you.
Members, any additional questions? All right, there are two amendments from Representative Hawkins. Representative Hawkins, you are recognized to explain Amendment 1, barcode 663703.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This amendment removes lines 142 for 143 and adds to leverage available technology and improve the reunification process. The amendment requires that the model reunification plan developed by the Office of Schools Safe Schools consider the integration of student information and notification systems to facilitate reunification after a natural disaster or man-made disaster.
Members, are there any questions on the amendment? Are there any objections to the amendment? Seeing no objections, are the amendment adopted without objection? Representative Hawkins, you are recognized to explain Amendment 2, barcode 746653.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This removes lines 203. The premise of it is, in order to make sure that all necessary parties are involved in the development of school district unification plans, the amendment requires that school districts work with local governments in addition to local law enforcement when developing the reunification plan.
Members, any questions on the amendment? Any objections to the amendment? Seeing none, show the amendment adopted without objection. So we're back on the bill as amended, and we do have public testimony. First up will be Allie McNair from the Florida Sheriff's Association. Waving support. Thank you, Ms. McNair. Barney Bishop with Florida Smart Justice Alliance. Waving in support. Don Stewart, Florida PTA.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for this safety bill. As you know, we've been working on different safety bills for several years now, and this bill we like. And as one of the founding principles of PTA's mission is to promote the safety and well-being of all children and youth. And as you are keenly aware, school safety is a critical priority for our students, educators, parents, and community members. A safe environment is paramount for our optimal learning. All efforts to address school safety must be locally determined, collaborative, and include a variety of factors, including the physical and physiological safety of students and age appropriate. This bill addresses a sundry of these concerns, such as the frequency of drills, family reunification, suicide screening, and training for school safe offers. But I would like to take a few moments to talk about two things of concern to the Florida PTA. One is that we are concerned about the punitive damages of withholding a superintendent's salary if DOE deems the school district has failed to comply with the school safety and security. We ask that there will be adequate turnaround time for corrective action. Just as any business, you know, we would ask you to do that. Another thing we really need to talk about, the most calls we get at the Florida PTA office is about the amount of calls that happened. That it tends to scare our children. And unfortunately, we use the term lockdown. That's a prison term. Schools aren't prisons. So, and that scares our children. And I really would like to advise school districts and all of us to use another word, because lockdown usually means a criminal system. We would suggest that school districts say safety drills. And students know that the practice of safety drills are necessary in the rare event of an emergency. The frequency of these drills has caused our students to swell with anxieties. Parents are telling us that our children are reacting in various ways, such as stomach aches, fainting, and afraid to go to school the next day. I know my own granddaughter called me one day after a drill and told me, she said, Nana, I'm not going to school tomorrow. It's not safe for me to go to school. And it was a drill. But remember, she was only in the second grade, so it needs to be some age-appropriate training to why this is so necessary to do. And then we've had some of our older students text their loved ones thinking this was the end. And another thing to think about, too many drills cause apathy. How many of you have been in a parking lot or in your own neighborhood and heard the alarms of homes go off? Did you investigate? I don't, because they go off so much. I mean, a lizard can cause an alarm to go off, you know, so I don't investigate. So we want to keep that into consideration as well. We are hopeful that when we prepare for these drills, we need to minimize the stress of our children and at the same time have clear guidance and procedures that keep our children safe and create a safe learning environment. This is a great bill. We look forward to working with you to address some of these little things that I think can be addressed with the members as this bill travels. And I thank you for putting it on the agenda and still keeping it forefront that safety is still necessary for our schools. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Stewart. Sheila Van Hoos with Raptor Technologies. Waving in support. Thank you, Ms. Van Hoos. Members, that concludes public testimony. We are in what they call debate. Any debate? Representative Honchowski, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair Lupus. Rep. Hopkins, I just want to again thank you for all your work on this. I want to thank you also for the time and effort you've put into this with meeting with so many of the stakeholders and really doing your homework. I appreciate, for those who might not be aware, he mentioned the reunification. He mentioned including local governments. I appreciate you adding that amendment after our discussion. Reunification can be a very traumatizing experience for everyone involved. In the case of Stoneman Douglas, when the shooting happened at 2:21 p.m., it was still 11:30 at night, midnight, where parents were still awaiting notifications. And at a time when you're traumatized and grieving as it is, anything that can be done to make that process less traumatic is a good thing. And by allowing technology to be part of the reunification process, to know who was in school that day, where they were, so that you can go through the elimination process quicker, will make it much easier on anybody who's affected by this. And I pray to God that the work that we're doing here will stop these acts from happening, because every child, every parent, every administrator, every teacher, every staff member, every person should feel safe going to schools and being in schools. So I just want to thank you very much for the bill.
Thank you, Representative Honchowski. Any additional debate members? Ranking Member Davis, you recognize?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Rep. Hawkins. It truly sounds like you've done some really good work with this bill, and the comments have repeatedly given us the impression that you're definitely open to continuing to meet with stakeholders and have some conversations. So I definitely appreciate that. I want this bill to get to a point where I can support it when I see it again, but today I won't be supporting it because I know there's still more work to be done, but you're willing to do that, so I appreciate that. So again, I will not be supporting it because I want to see it get to a different place, but thank you for being open to some of the suggestions you've taken already.
Representative LaMarca in debate.
Thank you, Chair, and Rep. Hawkins. Last year, I was asked to do what you're doing right now, and the first thing I did was ask the young lady to my right, the representative from Parkland, to join me in that, on that bill. And it's a weighty task, but as a former local government person and a person in the education space, I know that you take it seriously, and we all appreciate you bringing this bill forward. I'm going to be supporting it and ask everybody else to do the same.
Members, any additional debate?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Williams, recognized?
Thank you very much. Representative Hawkins, we had several conversations. I would like to continue on that path to building a better bill. Right now, I'm not in agreements with it, but you know my concerns, and I'm still waiting for the numbers that we spoke about. So once we are able to continue that conversation and come to some type of conclusion, but as of today, I will be down on the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, members, any additional debate? All right, seeing none, Representative Hawkins, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I would add, even from my time in local government, that no matter what position you're elected to, your first priority is always public safety and as an elected official. Rep. Lernan, you said it in the first bill we heard today, aren't we here for the children? And I believe we are. We are here for the children. And knowing that there are families out there that had to experience this awful tragedy, and the legacy of their children will be what comes out of this legislation. It's not the legacy they chose for their children, nor for their families to have to deal with, but it is what is leading the way across the United States because of what's happened to them and the law enforcement experts we've brought in to deal with this, the mental health experts that will all be part of working in this bill. Our children are our most precious gift, and we have to protect the ones in the future. I am open to hearing. I know the concern about when it mentions the superintendents in this bill. I am open to hear language. But when we have schools, since this tragedy happened, that are not in full compliance, I know of no other way to hold people accountable. Hope is never a defense in sports. Hope is never a defense when you're a school district hoping or thinking this won't happen to our schools. We have the experts that are bringing this in place. We have the commissions that have researched and looked at everything that's in this bill. And today I would ask you to support it, and let's protect the children and the future of these children. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Hawkins having closed on his bill. Kirsten, please call the roll.
Representatives Caruso. Davis.
No.
DeSegli.
Yes.
Duggan. Hawkins.
Yes.
Honchowski.
Yes.
Koster.
Yes.
LaMarca.
Yes.
Learned.
Yes.
McCurdy.
Yes.
Mooney.
Yes.
Nixon.
No.
Roach.
Yes.
Rodriguez. Trabolsi.
Yes.
Trunow.
Yes.
Williams.
No.
Chair Lupus.
Yes.
12 yeas, 3 nays.
Members, by your vote, HB 1421 will be reported favorably. Congratulations, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, committee.
All right, my friends, that brings us to the end of our agenda today and the closing of week 3, going into week 4 next. Happy New Year, as always, in this committee. Best committee ever, as I like to say.
So I'm seeing that there is no further business in front of, we do have Representative Tribolsi would like to say something. You have 55 minutes.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Let me just take my time and tell you that I apologize for being late today, but I wanted to wish you a happy new year.
Thank you, sir. This is well played. You all learned from the last committee, but I love all of you. All right, seeing no further business in front of the committee, Representative Hanshofsky moves, we rise. Thank you.